Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
What world is going on here?
Bulldog, this is Men at Work.
Suddenly, why did you...
6'4" and full of muscles.
Why did you play this straight all of a sudden? What happened to you?
You speak my language.
Come on.
He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich.
Thank you. You nailed it.
I come from the land down under.
Thunder. Thunder. The end there.
Can you hear the thunder?
Oh, see, I was wrong.
You better run. You better take cover.
Oh!
Wow.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
We can't make the open any longer than that. That went on for 16 minutes. Some of you remember.
Right. Long, it's a dance remix of the Men at Work classic.
One verse was entirely about the 09 Bills. I just put some new words into it.
Just Down Under by Men at Work could take it in a song draft.
Andrew, when were you here?
I was here. I was there for the 09 Bills.
You were here in 09? Were you here the day Dick Duran was fired?
I was. I think there were like little ones in studio that day.
My son was exactly 1 month old.
Yeah.
And, you know, wow. 1 month. We put the headphones on him, and he was holding his head up at 5 days, and my sister, who was a nurse, like, that's amazing. So he was, like, sitting up, and he's sitting right in this chair with the microphone, and then Bauk said, you guys got to get out of there because Dick Duran just got fired. It was, like, 2:15 in the afternoon.
Right.
Yeah.
We were used to anything happening at 2:15.
Right. We had to start early.
Yeah, you were here that day. All right.
And our old boss was like, can you call somebody and get some intel on Terry Fuel? I'm like, I'm making $10 an hour. No, I'm not going to do that right now. that was fun.
Go team.
Yeah.
You're the fourth highest paid guy. Anyway, so Andrew Filippone is with us from Pittsburgh, and a lot is happening. A lot is always happening there. Like, what a year for the Steelers.
More off the field than on it. Yeah.
More off the field than on it. So, I read you, and you're strong that Antonio Brown needs to go.
Yeah, I am.
And it sounds today like he will go, right?
Yeah, the owner talked, and they have a very like traditional stick to what we've done since we fired Bill Austin in 68 way of doing things here, where mm-hmm. the owner... Art Rooney doesn't usually talk to, and it's only print reporters, by the way. He doesn't talk to print reporters until a certain date, and they all get in a room, and no cameras are allowed. And then, you know, you'll go on Twitter, and you'll see one of the beat reporters will have a story up with his quotes in it. So it's very out of character for him to seek out an interview. And I think that's what happened here because there's so much fan outrage about the way the season ended with Antonio Brown that I think it was strongly suggested to him that he get his comments out. And if you read the tea leaves here, the Steelers are a very conservative organization. Art Rooney II is a lawyer by trade, and he usually sounds like one. He showed his hand more than really I've ever seen him really show his cards before. And if you look at the quotes, it seems pretty obvious to me that Antonio Brown has played his last game as a Steeler.
Well, how much sense does this make for a team with a window that's got, you know, it's got to be closing here with Roethlisberger at the helm to take on that dead money and also then have to replace Antonio Brown, Andrew?
Yeah, let me address the dead money part of it. There's a lot of conjecture about that, Chris. In this article, Art Rooney II said that the salary cap is not going to box them into anything. And some reporters have gotten this wrong. There seems to be a belief inside the Steelers organization that really all told, the cap hit is only going to be, the dead money is only going to be like $5 or $6 million.
Whoa.
Because even though like you see, like, oh, if they trade him, it's $21 million against his cap. Well, I guess if he's not on the roster, they save $15 million in cap money. So you subtract 15 from 22, or 21, and it's really just a net loss of like $5 or $6 million. And I think they'd be willing, especially because they're getting a cap credit with Bell missing all of last year. They're going to get a cap credit of $14.5 million. I think, you know, because it's not so punitive, they're just ready to wash their hands from the player and move on from him. They don't feel like the cap hit is going to be such an albatross that it leaves them no choice to keep him on the team next year.
But that's like not a minor detail there. I mean, that's a massive difference. $5 million versus $21 million.
Yeah. Ed Bouchette, who's a Hall of Fame beat writer who's covered the Steelers for 35 years, cleared that up. And I think Rooney, when he made those comments today, was alluding to that math.
So I also know from reading you that, like, you've lost it for Tomlin.
Yeah.
And so do you blame him for this with Bell and Brown put together?
I blame him for Brown more than I do Bell. I don't know what Tomlin could have done to get Bell to show up on time or to take the Steelers' contract offers. With Brown, I mean, this is a classic Terrell Owens-type situation where you had the balance, you had the scale, and it's like 115 catches and 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns. And because the production is so great, you want to look at the stuff that Brown does internally and sometimes demonstrably, like on the field, as just minor annoyances. But I do think when he quit on the team before the last game, that was the final straw for him. And I get the sense, just like when Owens left Philadelphia and Dallas, that for this organization, it's going to be like a weight off their shoulders. I think the whole entire team will exhale, because with Brown, you just never knew when the next incident was going to occur, when he was either going to, you know, have a tirade on the field, which is a minor thing, but then when he runs the wrong route or kind of sleepwalks through a quarter of a game, that's another. And the quarterback is on the record saying that kind of stuff would happen. And I think going AWOL was the final straw for guys who might have been on his side. So, yeah, like I do think, Mike, that they would not have traded him, or they would not be in this conundrum or predicament if he hadn't exploded and went off like he did the last week of the season.
What about Roethlisberger's culpability? I mean, I know you're sort of aligned with him through the show or through the station. Not that that necessarily matters, but I mean, you've had interactions with him. Is the quarterback culpable in a way that the coach isn't?
The quarterback is responsible for this, Mike. I think he pushes too many buttons. I think you know when you've been around a guy for 8 years what his temperament is and what his personality is, and you should know by now when is the right time or the wrong time to push him or get on his case. And after the game Brown had against New Orleans, he had 2 touchdowns and 185 yards. I don't think the Wednesday, the first practice after that game, is the right time to get on his receiver for going through practice in a haphazard fashion. And I don't think that's the right day to get on him for jogging through a route. I don't get that. That to me doesn't make sense. If you want to get on a number three wide receiver or a rookie for that in practice, that's one thing. I don't get the timing. And I do think Ben by now should know better. And Ben has said some things about AB this year, like, we have a bunch of number one wide receivers on the team, and he named the running back, and he named Ryan Switzer. And he said after the Denver game that he should have thrown the ball at the goal line to Juju Smith-Schuster 4 times. And, you know, Montana would never say I should have thrown it to J.J. Stokes 4 times. You know, so, like, right. It just – he did some things where I don't really get what the motivation was, because – anybody could have looked at those comments and sensed some conflict between the two. They were slights at Brown, and I thought they were unnecessary.
Yeah, this is very interesting because this all we established you were here when Dick Geron got fired. So obviously you weren't around. You probably weren't even alive when the bickering bills were a thing back in '89. But like that came to a head and like during one season and exploded, and then it was over. Like this with the Steelers feels like it's been going on for 3-4 years with Bell and Brown and Roethlisberger, and like just there's just been stuff here that is really stacked up on Tomlin, I think.
Yeah, and that's why I think Tomlin picked the right team to coach, because any other team in this situation, I think by now would have picked the players over the coach. Easier to fire the coach, bring somebody else in here, see if that guy can manage the personalities, keep the talent together at wide receiver, at quarterback, at running back, and see if that guy could make it work. But the Steelers have had three coaches since the Lyndon B. Johnson administration. Mm. I think that they hold that up like a badge of honor. And I think it's antiquated. And I think just because it worked one way 30 years ago, to continue to make that the ethos or the philosophy of the organization because, well, we're just known for not firing coaches, I hate that. And so I think Tomlin can be held responsible for creating the monster that Antonio Brown is in terms of being a divisive or incendiary force.
Andrew Filippone, our old colleague, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, dropping LBJ, evoking memories for sure of the president draft, which was Andrew's idea. You an LBJ guy at all, or...?
Yeah, I tried to read a book about him like 4 or 5 years ago, Mike,
mm-hmm.
because there was a series of books written about him that I think were New York Times
Caro.
Best books of the year.
Caro is the writer. Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I remember from that book is that Lyndon B. Johnson would drive around his like home in Texas in a Cadillac, and like somebody he would stick a glass of like ginger ale and scotch or something like out the driver's side window, and another car would drive up and refill the glass for him, and he would keep on driving. I love that. But other than that, I can't tell you anything else about like his social.
This is like midair refueling here for an airplane. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if you knew that before that draft, he's moving up. He's skyrocketing, perhaps even. You would give him big credit for that. And you mentioned Montana, too. I noticed something about Montana this morning, that he has something in common with Bulldog, and even you, in that his Twitter, it's his complete first name. He's Joseph Montana on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
Like, has anybody ever said Joseph Montana?
No, never
that you
once.
Know of?
No.
Like, you're Christopher on Twitter.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Andrew's Andrew. That's his name, though.
Does anybody call you Michael?
Yes. Not hardly ever. Not, you know, not except for a few people that I know real well, but hardly, not too many.
Would you prefer that?
Yes. I always like it.
Oh, okay.
You know, my father, mom, dad.
Yeah.
You know, a few people. Teachers, a couple of teachers I'm still acquainted with.
Did you ever have an Andy phase here, Andrew?
No. No, I nip that in the bud.
All right, good.
If I'm gonna shorten my first name, I go Drew over Andy.
That seems right. How about the Penguins?
Drew.
What do you want to know about him?
Well, compared with last year or compared with like peak Penguins, it's respectable. Like they're as much of the Penguins as they need to be a factor, I would say, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, I think as of this very second, I like them more than last year, and the reason why I say that is because of Chris Letang. Last year, he was a total mess.
Yeah.
He had come back from, a litany of injuries. He had the neck injury, and he had the guy pretty much for maybe a stretch of 2 or 3 years, every time it looked like he was right again, he'd have some kind of catastrophe hit that put him on ice, so to speak. And I didn't know what they were going to get this year out of him, but he's playing 26 minutes a night, which is fourth, I think, in the NHL. He's already scored 10 goals. His partner, Brian Dumoulin, who like has like the Mark Methot to Erik Karlsson thing going on, has blossomed in part because he plays with him. And, you know, they won a Stanley Cup without him a couple of years ago because he was injured. Last year, I think he had as much to do with the loss to the Capitals as anybody. And now I see Crosby, who doesn't have the points, but has probably played his best, is having one of his most complete season in terms of defensive responsibilities. He's killing penalties now, too. Matt Murray has returned from injury and looks like, you know, a guy that won two Stanley Cups. So they're in good shape right now, Mike. Like, there aren't a lot of holes with this team. I think the one question I would have about them is, like, Malkin is having a very weird year. He's minus 13, which is not a stat that necessarily tells the story, but I think it's reflective of the way he's played this year. He's kind of been in and out of it, and so that would be one thing that's worth keeping track of with them in the second half. Like, when does the light bulb go off for him? When does he flip the switch and start to look like one of the sport's best players?
I know you can worry about any team's important players getting hurt, of course. But Murray, like, I wonder about, like, that's he's been derailed a couple of times here, and, like, I wonder about head injuries and, like, that. You're an errant shot in practice away from going down with a concussion if you're a goalie, if you've had previous ones, maybe especially. So, like, I feel like that would be an area I would be maybe more worried about than anything.
Yeah, that happened to him, actually.
Right.
Olimata, like, randomly, like, ended practice with a shot that hit him in the head, and he missed a month because of it last year. He is a guy that I think the injuries keep him from entering the upper echelon of goalies, Marc-Andre Fleury, the guys that you would put in your top five who are usually dependable and have the statistics and the play to back it up this year. One of the things I've noticed, and I don't know what this means for the Penguins and other teams moving forward, but like, even take the Sabres. The teams that are juggling goaltenders or splitting up the playing time have the best save percentages in the league this year. Like, there aren't many teams. Vegas is an exception. There aren't many teams that have asked one goalie to carry the load and have had a lot of success. The Islanders lead the league in save percentage, and they've done it with Leonard and Grice.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sabres are in the top 5-2, and I think the Penguins are sixth. So, you know, Murray, I always describe him this way. He's a big game goalie for me. He's a guy that reminds me of almost Eli Manning, where his stats in the regular season don't look good, but if you get to the playoffs, you have a lot of confidence in the guy. And it looks like the Penguins are going to make the playoffs, and it looks like right now they're going to get matched up with Columbus again. And I don't know if Columbus has a goalie right now. Did Bobrovsky get, like, suspended or
Yeah, he did.
It's messy. They could fall out, like, if they sell guys off, which is hard to do if you're in a playoff race, but I mean, they're going to lose some big names there in the summer, probably, and he's one of them. So,
or Pitt could move up and play the Sabres.
That would be fun.
Right?
That would be a lot of fun. Who would start that series for Buffalo, Allmark or Hutton?
I think I would leave that to the last 39 games to be determined.
Right,
but
now I would say they still treat Hutton like their number one, but I think the door's been open for Allmark to emerge, and he's played better of late.
That goaltending point, that's analytics, baby, right? I mean, in hockey culture, tradition, they would never – all these teams would be riding one guy. But they figured out with, you know, through evidence that playing guys back-to-back or playing guys all the time can be counterproductive or will be counterproductive. So I think Eli Manning is done in New York.
Really?
Do you not?
They have the sixth pick in the draft. And I would hope that they take a quarterback, and I would like to think that that quarterback starts the year as their number one guy next season. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's out of respect to Manning, the company line continues to be that he's the quarterback there next year. And I just don't know how, if you're a fan of that team, that's not what you want to hear. I mean, 2011 and 2007 aside, that's so far in the past with the way he's played for the better part of 4 years. I don't know what would make the Giants believe that they're going to get a improved or better version of Eli Manning next year. They're not going to draft five starters on the offensive line. So
no, it's denial is all
like
there is.
Yeah.
It's one playoff game in 8 seasons. I mean, in a division where nobody's like pulled away. How many do the Texans have? How many playoff games have they played in? No, they played.
Well, they played in more, but they've got two. You're talking about playoff games, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got the Giants played the Packers.
That's it.
And that's it. Yeah.
2 years ago with McAdoo, and that was after the boat ride. And before that, it's the Super Bowl over the second Super Bowl. Like, that's the last one before that. All right.
Mike, I have to give you credit for something.
Please do. I usually would be reluctant, but in this case, I will allow it.
You, because of some of the social media things you've put out and, like, some of the conversations I've heard you have, Chris, this is embarrassing, but I'm going to admit it. I have also fallen into the YouTube vortex of going back and watching old games.
Yeah.
And I have you to either credit / blame for that.
But for you, old games are like 2011.
Right.
No, I've gone back and watched Cosell games from the 70s.
All right. Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't think this is that. I don't know. I tease him about a lot of stuff, but, like, you know, whatever. I fall into YouTube labyrinths watching rancid videos. So, like, who am I to mock? I mean, whatever. I mean, we all have our drug, you know. So I've never thought, like, the fantasy stuff is completely over the top. But, like, watching old games, like, whatever.
I like it for the TV part. I mean, I usually will not sit through an entire old sporting event, but I like to hear the announcers. I like to watch the TV show that is these games. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I'm disappointed when the games cut out the halftime.
Yeah. Yeah, halftime or the ads, you know, even sometimes, or the studio updates.
You'd like to see the NFL today, right?
Yeah.
With Brent and Irv.
Yeah, some of them do. Some of them have that. But, yeah, I do that a lot. So we'll talk more about this. I'm curious to see what you've thought of it. All right. Well, very short notice. Thanks, as always, for coming on.
Anytime, guys. I'll talk to you later.
See ya.
All right, man. Be cool.
Andrew Filippone, 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, and also on CBS Sports Radio. Find him at the Pony Express on Twitter. In related news, stamps are going up in price. Wow. 55 cents for the forever stamp starting in a couple of weeks. Mm. That's a good one. I just thought about the Pony Express.
Everything's going great.
Let's get to Paul Hamilton. Sabres and Hurricanes tomorrow night. Will Jack Eichel play? Jeff Skinner's return and more. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
The way they played last night, they definitely would have come out on the top side. But, you know, Tampa Bay was, they were eager, they were hungry, and they wanted to make sure that they, that was Paul. They just put out the buffet.
On WGR.
Go ahead, Paul, you can go get a plate.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, I thought they were great.
Sports Radio 550.
I almost passed out during that segment. I was laughing so hard at Rob. Plus, the noise behind him was so ridiculous the whole time. But that, I got dizzy sitting over here. Like, I was crying from laughing, and I thought, I feel like I'm gonna fall out of my chair.
That is funny to me, because Rob was very quick-witted. But I just am always, like, sort of protective of Paul. I don't like it either. I can't just laugh, because I feel like, you know, they're friends, and this is, you know, this is guys. But, like, maybe Rob deserves a shot like that. And I'm not the one to send it his way either, because, like, I'm not in perfect shape anymore.
Right.
Anymore.
Who among us is?
Right, Paul?
Well, I send him his way sometimes, but and he'll have another one for you tomorrow, I'm sure.
Uh-oh.
Okay, well, we look forward to that.
Already?
Teeing it up already, Paul.
When did you get there? Already?
Oh, yeah, as soon as we landed, I set him up for one.
Okay. We just heard in sports, Jack Eichel is back. And, boy, the Sabres got through that. Three games, two wins. How many goals was it, Bulldog?
Ten goals.
Five in one period.
Nine of them in two games. Yeah.
So, what a relief.
Yeah. Well, let me be just a 1% cautious. Housley did not say he was back. Eichel said he's back to 100%.
Right.
But in typical Phil Housley coaching fashion, it's, well, no, I'm not saying he's definitely playing, and, you know. So we can't say that today. We have to wait until he's a game time decision, and then we'll know when he hits warm-ups.
Okay, I appreciate that, Paul. When he plays tomorrow, do you think he'll be between Skinner and Thompson like he was at practice today? This is an idea that came up on yesterday's show, sort of based on what they were able to do by separating Reinhardt and Skinner in the game on Tuesday against New Jersey. Like, okay, let's try some different things here and see if we can't find way to spread the scoring out a little bit. What do you think of this idea of Thompson playing with Skinner and Eichel?
Yeah, I like it. The only thing that I wonder about is Thompson likes to carry the puck. So there's only one puck out there. So will they be able to coexist when they both like to carry the puck? And maybe it'll work just fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only thing that hits my mind is, you know, as Thompson's been more successful as he's been playing recently, he's been carrying the puck a lot and, you know, moving into the zone and making moves on defensemen. And you know, they both like to shoot the puck. So, you know, having two of them like that on the same line, we'll see how it works out. It might work out just fine, but that would be the only thing I would think of.
What do you have to say on Thompson as a prospect? Like, I realize today I haven't thought about him too many times here. When I think of the guys that they're building with, I don't think of Thompson, but it's right to include him, I think, right?
Absolutely. No, he's a former first-round pick. And, you know, when he, you know, I was the first one, and I'll admit I was wrong. I mean, I thought the best way to develop him would be in Rochester, which is normally the way Jason Botterill and Randy Sexton go about it. But they decided it would be better for him to be up in Buffalo, and I just couldn't see it. There were a lot of mistakes, and I just couldn't understand why he was up here. But it appears that they were right, that he has started to develop and started to improve his game by being up here with NHL coaches and going over tape with NHL coaches and staying after practice with NHL coaches. And, you know, in this case, it looks like that was a good decision for him. And, you know, as I said, I'll be the first one to admit I was wrong on that one.
Paul, the game before he scored the first goal, if it wasn't his first goal of the season, it was his first notable goal of the season, was in Pittsburgh. It was just a rocket of a shot that he scored on. And I think whatever game preceded that, I think I tweeted in the first period, okay, enough of this. Get him out of here. And then the next time they got on the ice, it was like, oh, wow, you can do that. Okay, well, do that some more, please. And he had a little hot spurt there right within that 10-game streak, and that Pittsburgh game was maybe right in the center of that. And then, you know, he cooled off a little bit along with a lot of their other secondary scoring. But, like, I'm intrigued to see how that all fits together, and maybe more so how the rest of it fits together here. Like how Reinhart does with, where is he now? With Sobotka and Sherry?
And Reinhart and Sherry. Reinhart set Sherry up at least three times last game for golden opportunities, and he just couldn't score. But it looked like they had a pretty good chemistry. It looked like they were doing well together, and they certainly got some great scoring chances. Sherry just couldn't finish on them.
Yeah. So, like, I'm digging into that. And, you know, Mittelstadt even scored in the game on Tuesday. I mean, I don't know. How much of a grain of salt do we want to put on Tuesday? I commend them for scoring five goals like they did. Do you think they took advantage of a team that was, like, wounded there? Like, how would you want to put an asterisk at all on Tuesday?
Well, that wounded team was 4-2 without Taylor Hall.
Right.
I mean, and they were using a goaltender who was 3-0 against the Sabres all time. And had played over the years, what did they want, 6 in a row, I believe it was, in Buffalo's building. So, and in the first period, you know, Buffalo was playing pretty well, but it looked like they weren't going to break through on a goaltender again.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know what I liked about the whole thing more is 14 different players got on the score sheet in the second period. In one period, 14 different Sabres. That's only the third time in their history that has happened. Only four guys did not get on the score sheet, not including goaltenders, in the second period. So nobody had 2 points in those five goals. So I thought that was pretty nice. And you brought up Mittelstadt, and what a nifty goal he scored. And again, that just gives you an idea of what he's capable of, you know, when he figures it out.
Yeah, I like your answer here, Paul, because I'm reminded, even as I asked it and you started responding, that the game did get, after Buffalo took the 2-1 lead, I thought New Jersey had their best pocket within the game. They got a power play. Buffalo killed it off. It got a little tight. Like, it looked like New Jersey was taking it over and Buffalo was falling asleep, and then they just, you know, they hit the gas again and found their way to five goals before the period was over. So,
and that's where Hutton came into play. He had one of their defensemen, I can't remember the name of the guy, right in the slot, and he stopped him twice in a row. and then they wound up taking the penalty. But, you know, he really made some big saves when it could have gotten away from them, you know, and then how does that change the game if the Devils score there? And then Hutton gets the opportunity to play with five goals. That doesn't happen for him very often, where he's sitting there with a 5-1 lead. He's usually down 1-0 or it's 2-1 or something like that. And then, you know, he has to scratch and claw and he has no room for air. So that had to feel pretty good for him to have a little bit of breathing room also.
Danico is the Devils defenseman. Danico is always the Devils defenseman in any situation. Would the, if you know, so you said it was 14 different players had a point in the second period in the game. Would you know if the game where they scored 9 goals in the second period against the Leafs and won 14-4 would also be one of those games? I don't know if you
the
saw
Sabres
a list.
Did, the Sabres did. Yes, I did see the other two times. I do not believe that was the other game.
Okay.
But I'm not 100%. And yes, the Sabres did tweet that out. I might be able to find it as we're talking.
Okay. I was at the game, so I know it's true. They scored 9 goals in the period. I'm pretty sure that's still a record. And won 14-4. Paul Hamilton with us, the Sabres and Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow night. So it's Jeff Skinner's return to Carolina. You're there, right?
Yes, yes, we have arrived. It's 39 degrees here. I thought maybe coming to Carolina, it might be
hot,
might be a little bit warmer than it actually is here.
So
it's beautiful sunshine, but it's 39 degrees.
Hang on, Paul. We'll talk some more after a short timeout. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. The Sabres are already in Raleigh for tomorrow night's game with the Hurricanes. We're talking to Paul Hamilton about that. So there probably wouldn't yet be any sort of interaction between Skinner and Carolina or the media or anything like that. What do you think this will be like? Like, there are lots of these in hockey, but here's a guy who was a good player for them for many years and is back there for the first time, having a killer season for his new team.
Yeah, he is. And you know, you got to feel that he's going to feel like, hey, I wasn't wanted. I mean, the owner wasn't going to pay him. So it's like, all right, we're not paying him. Let's get him out of here. So, you know, yeah, if was it circled on his calendar? No, but he knew when the game was. I mean, he knew when it was going to be. He tends to be a guy who looks straight ahead and is really into now. As you know, he said, I got enough things to worry about than worrying about how Carolina's doing or what's going on. He goes, yeah, I look. He goes, quite honestly, I look to see how all the teams are doing in the NHL. I'm just an NHL fan. But he said, I don't sit there and obsess over, you know, what the Hurricanes are doing, even though he's got friends in the room. And he goes, I have friends all over the league, and I look at all of them and see how they're doing. So, you know, he's aware of them. He's aware of, you know, what they're doing. But, you know, he'd like to get to come out of here with 2 points in tomorrow's game.
Well, I'll bet. I mean, you know, there's getting traded, and then there's being traded, and like everyone knows something's got to happen, and the organization made a lot of noise about needing to change the culture and all this sort of stuff. It's not unlike O'Reilly here. He's not been back here yet. The Sabres, of course, played there after Christmas, but it's kind of similar circumstances. So it's a little different than just, well, it was a hockey trade. You know, it was good for both teams, whatever. Like it feels like Carolina just wanted him off of their team.
And then Brind'Amour did not say very nice things about him when Brind'Amour was asked about it. Like,
right.
You know, we want guys who want to be Carolina. What did he say? Who play like Carolina Hurricanes, and he doesn't, or something like that. I don't
Whatever.
Remember exactly
yeah.
what he said, but it was something like that. And, Mike, I did find that. The two other instances where 14 players had a point in a period were November 2nd, 2006 against Tampa and October 21st, 2009 at Florida.
Okay, so no. Tampa game, I'm just going to slip it in just to see if it's right, because I'd be excited if it's right. It's a game where Le Cavalier got thrown out in the first period. Not sure. Yeah, you know, we want players to play like Hurricanes and Bills and these teams. Like, you know, we're averse to goals and touchdowns. We just want them to, you know, represent.
If you score 29 goals in a season, in half a season, you're probably playing like a Sabre.
Yes. I mean, if that's not playing like a Sabre, change the definition.
You can play like a Satanist if you're going to get 29 goals. I don't really care. Like, wear a pitchfork out there. I don't give a crap.
We want to play Buffalo Bills football. Can you just, does that mean touchdowns one of these years? Please. Does that mean passing someday? All right. So what's next here?
Well,
Skinner being back there. That's where we were before I
Got loose.
I don't want to necessarily leave the Sabres for dead here, Paul, but we opened our show today talking about the way Columbus handled the situation with Bobrovsky. And, I mean, I can't remember the last time a team went as far as Columbus goes. There's a reason why you always get the very nondescript violation of team rules. The description that the Blue Jackets offer leaves your imagination to run wild with, like, what must have been happening there that caused this to happen?
It was with players. I mean, they already said, the GM did say it was not with Tortorella. And I read an article before we went on from The Athletic saying that when they got to the tarmac, before they got on the plane, players pulled him aside. Then team leadership kind of had it out with him right on the tarmac. So there might not a fight or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right, right. But there was, an intervention type of thing. Maybe.
They were letting him know whatever is happening here is not good. So I'm wondering if team leadership wanted this to happen.
Well, maybe that's what necessitates or what leads to such a damning sounding release by the team.
That's what I thought of. Like, who knows? But that's the kind of thing that teams don't make room for as often, right? Like, if it's something between players or player coach, they probably don't want you to know specifics. And what you're saying here, Bulldog, is this is even more than you usually get.
Yeah.
But he was pulled from that game. They've been losing. They're out of a playoff spot or close to that at the moment. It's real close. It's a very stressful season probably for Columbus, yeah. Paul, with Panarin and Bobrovsky being free agents and they really haven't had the big success yet. If they make it, they're probably looking at the Penguins or Capitals again. So, I mean, that's a tough call.
And Tortorella said he pulled him out of there because he wanted them for the next game. He wanted them he goes, it was an opportunity to keep them a little bit fresher because he goes, we got big games coming up. Washington was one of the teams. I don't remember the other. And so he said that's the reason he pulled him out of there.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to keep them a little fresher for the next one.
Right. They're in third right now in the Metro, but they're just a point ahead of the Islanders. So they're
and
right.
Now the Sabres are ahead of them.
Right. They're right in this schmozzle of teams that are going to be either battling for that, you know, that third spot in the division or one of those wild cards. Their point total lends you to think that they'll be a factor in that probably the rest of the year. Unless they blow up, you know, unless they trade these guys away that are about to be UFAs.
Well, let's ask Paul the other question we were talking about there, too, that I think, I mean, Paul, I can remember you from as long as I've known you being harsh against, like, the big free agents, and I think also, like, the big whale trades at the deadline where you're giving up a lot of young players or whatever it is to get those guys. And I think the league is smarter about that than it used to be. Bulldog mentioned Evander Kane earlier. Like, we were kind of sort of not impressed with how the Sabres did there. And, yeah, I mean, I was. But I also think teams go, what am I really getting out of this? As good as I might think he is, and for how long? And San Jose went out quickly in round two. Like, that wasn't – if they had known that, they wouldn't have made that trade. So I think the league is smarter about that. I think teams with players who are going to free agency will maybe just – or maybe this actually can be shown over recent years, are doing worse in what they get back.
Well, Skinner's, I'm sorry, I believe it's no movement. Don't quote me. I believe it's no movement came with him because he's a pending unrestricted free agent. So trading him, even if you wanted to, would not be easy. And number two, I don't think Bottrell wants to. I think he's already decided he's going to be here right to the end. And you know, even if he's not signed, they're going to keep him right up to July 1st and try to sign him.
Right.
We're not worried about.
I'm living under the assumption they're going to figure Skinner out. What Mike was asking you about is what Columbus could do with selling off rentals like Bobrovsky or Panarin,
or just, you know, in general around the league. So Skinner applies, but yeah, I also don't expect him to be moved.
Yeah. No. A guy like Panarin, I think, would fall in and. Is that a good move? Yeah, if you're really going to be right there for the cup, give your Tampa, and you can fit him in somehow, and you're only going to use him to try to win the cup.
Right.
You know, and then that's going to be it. You're not going to be able to keep him. Sure, I'm in. I would do something like that. I agree with what Bottrell said on your show just the other day, which I've been some other outlets and I have been reporting for over a month now. he's not doing the rental. I mean, he's just not. That's not the way he feels he needs to rebuild this team. And he acknowledged with you guys, he understands they don't have any depth. Their young players aren't ready for the NHL yet. They're still developing. He gets it. He understands where they're at. But, you know, so I think it just depends on, but I think Panarin would be definitely a candidate if they know for sure that he's not, you know, he's not going to be in line to, sign with the Blue Jackets unless they feel they can win a Stanley Cup. And it's not trending that way right now.
Right. When we talked about
really
this,
not a point for them to keep him.
Sorry, when we talked about this earlier, Joe suggested, like, if they think that, maybe they go the other way and they buy a bunch of rentals and just try to load up while they've got Bobrovsky and they've got Panarin, knowing that they're going to lose them for nothing. Let's just go out with a bang and go as big as we can here. I mean, that's awfully risky.
Yes, that is Mike McD walking back into Teddy KGB to play him that last time. But he does win. He does win, right, Paul?
Yeah, the problem with Bobrovsky is he's never been a playoff player. I have things on my mind. That's why.
I know. It's all right, Paul.
Sorry about you.
There was no way you were getting a Rounders reference.
That's okay.
Anyway, there's no way. I mean, he just blew right by.
Paul probably has 50 movies, if not 500, that I would not be able to name. He could explain to me the scene, the premise, the plot. I would just probably be
I did that to
blank.
The instigators earlier, too. We were looking at lines, and I'm at the end of the arena, so it's really hard for me to see the two lines that are going the other way. And Craig Gervais started talking. I go, guys, why I'm looking here, I can't write these down because I'm talking to you. I got to give you the lines right now. I just totally interrupted him and went in a different direction. So don't feel bad, Mike. I've already done it to somebody else today.
Thank you, and I do not.
No, of course not. No. All right.
Okay, well, tomorrow, Sabres and Hurricanes, will talk again tomorrow night.
I will be there.
Very good. Paul, John Clayton, Andrew Filippone, our guest today. We'll see you tomorrow at 3. Rob Ray will be on at 4. Sneaky Joe coming up. The Nightcap next. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
Gentlemen, be free.